See You Now is a podcast highlighting the innovative and human-centered solutions that nurses are coming up with to solve for today's most challenging healthcare problems. Created in collaboration with Johnson & Johnson and the American Nurses Association.
Dr. Tedros, as part of this whole debate at the moment about WHO and funding, he said, you know, it costs about £2 billion a year to run WHO. I know some people think that's a huge amount of money, but actually, for an organisation like WHO, it's not a lot. And if you didn't have WHO, you'd need to create it. And he said, and do you know what else costs £2 billion? He said, one stealth bomber. And I did a quick calculation and figured that you could get about 100, 120,000 nurses educated for that £2 billion as well. It's always about choices. There has been a massive miscalculation of the value of nursing. The costs of getting healthcare wrong, 10, 12, 15% negative impact on GDP. Just follow the hard evidence. And if you're elected with a mandate to keep people safe and secure, if you don't look after health, you are immediately putting at risk that mandate you have to keep people safe and secure.
Welcome to See You Now. I'm Rebecca McEnroy. What does it mean to invest in nursing? For the International Council of Nurses, it means speaking value to power and convincing countries of the crucial role nurses play in ensuring individuals, families, communities, and countries can thrive, can maintain economic and social stability, and can raise healthy and safe children. It means making the case over and over again in the face of workforce shortages, policy challenges, violence, and inadequate resources. It means dismantling myths, stereotypes, and hierarchies, and launching campaigns to research and prove the economic case for investing in more nurses to be educated, adequately compensated, and recognized as professionals in an invaluable profession. In this episode, Oriana Baudette, the VP of Innovation at the American Nurses Association Credentialing Center and Foundation, talks with one nurse who is leading global efforts to support nurses for ICN about the ingenious solutions he is finding to meet global challenges head on and with passion.
My name's Howard Catton. I'm a nurse and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the International Council of Nurses. ICN is the body recognised by the World Health Organization and other international organizations to speak on behalf of the global profession. Our members are national nursing associations. We have more than 140 in membership. And currently the global nursing profession is about 30 million strong.
Howard, it's phenomenal to have you here as a part of the See You Now podcast, to have you be able to share your expertise with the See You Now audience. One of the things that we've been reading a lot about is the State of the World's Nursing 2025 report, which identifies the significant global challenge as we're seeing increasing geopolitical instability, conflicts, climate change, and economic uncertainty. And all of this is impacting health and well-being. So can you talk to us about these macro trends and what they mean in terms of how nurses are living and practicing today, and what this means for both individuals and also global leaders?
Ori, it's great to be chatting to you again. Delighted to be talking to nurses in America as well. I always learn so much from these conversations. So very happy we've got this time together. You'll remember that we waited nearly 75 years for the first ever State of the World's Nursing report. And I think that's worth reminding everybody about, that it took 75 years for WHO to get to the place where they say we need a State of the World's Nursing report. We worked very hard on that. We were very excited about 2020. It was going to be the designated year of the nurse and midwife by WHO. We put all of our plans in place. And then days into 2020, we were hit by the pandemic and we had to pivot and we had to change. And it was for those reasons as well, the fact that the land, the ground changed under our feet, that we lobbied in very hard with Dr. Tedros and said, look, we can't wait another 75 years for the next one. We need another one to know what the impact of the pandemic has been, because our associations around the world, ICM was monitoring very closely. We all know the massive physical and mental health toll that the pandemic took. We got Dr. Tedros's agreement to that, actually, when we were in Montreal at the Congress 2 years ago, worked very hard, got that report, virtually, the ink was virtually dry on the paper, and we're about to launch. And what happens again? The plates change again and shift again with particularly the decision of the US to give its notice to withdraw from WHO. But I think it's important to say it's not just the US. There are other countries who are cutting back on health spending and international aid and development monies as well. So yet again, we're in a situation where we have a report, but we have the tectonic plates moving and changing. But I don't get depressed or down about that. Actually, quite the opposite. I look at it and say, we have the very latest evidence from around the world on the state of the world's nursing. It tells us where there has been some progress and some improvements, and I think we need to acknowledge that. But it also shows us the massive areas in which we need to further strengthen and we need to further invest. But here for me is the critical point. The reason we are so strong and committed, passionate about our advocacy for strengthening nursing, supporting nurses, isn't just because we are a wonderful profession, which I'm very proud and you and everybody else is very proud to be part of. All of those shifting tectonic plates, all of those big global health challenges, all of the uncertainty that we face right the way around the world, whether it be from conflicts, from climate change, from NCDs, from aging population, whatever it is, nurses have the answers. How do we square the circle of ever-increasing healthcare demands at a time that the money is really tight and it feels insurmountable? Part of how we do that is through nursing, is through our interventions, is through our solutions. And that leads us to the arguments around strengthening, supporting, investing in nursing, being a really smart investment and bringing more than just health improvement, but helping to generate economic growth, to bring stability, to bring peace, to bring healing to all of the broader social determinants of health as well. We've shown through the ICN work the connection from nursing to virtually every one of the sustainable development goals that the world is linked to. My optimism, again, was reinforced at the World Health Assembly. In the midst of all of this change, in the midst of WHO actively looking at how they're going to cut their budget by 30 or 40%. The State of the World's Nursing report was on the table, and the decision by all members of such states as to whether they will extend the global nursing strategy through to 2030. It was due to run out this year. Unanimously, countries put their hands up and said, we need to extend that strategy. We need to support, we need to strengthen, we need to invest in nursing. And I know it's really easy for people to come to beautiful Switzerland, to be in WHO, to look out of the window, to see the lake and to see the Alps and to say nice and positive things. But they did. They committed to nursing it. And actually, one of the things that we've got to do is to hold them to that commitment when they go home. So there is hope, there is optimism, and there is real power in the profession. And now is the time that we have to push to advocate harder than ever before, but with absolute confidence that we have the solutions. We have many of the answers.
It's affirming and reaffirming to hear that nursing is being invested in. That investment is going to be continued. But one of the things that you mentioned is that you're seeing multiple countries starting to step away from that world stage. We are seeing this isolationist perspective that is impacting health across the globe. What is that impact, and how could this potentially position nurses differently?
So within days of the US announcement on its decision to pull funding from WHO, we were starting to hear reports from nurses and health organizations, not-for-profits, non-governmental organizations, about how in some parts of the world, and particularly in Africa, they were just having to stop their programs immediately because the money stopped. Vaccinations, public health, HIV, AIDS, this is what we were hearing at the time and continue to hear as well. So it's a devastating impact that we've seen, and that WHO are trying to react and respond to. And frankly, the philanthropic money isn't there at the scale needed to replace the government money, which is being withdrawn. And as I said, it's the US, of course, gets a lot of attention because of how significant it is. But we've seen other countries, my home country, the UK, has reduced. And the rationale for reducing is defense spending. I know some nurses, they may listen to what I'm about to say. We're making a bit of a stretch here from nursing. How do we go from nursing to climate change to geopolitics to defense? Well, the reason is because if countries, as they are doing, are making decisions to prioritize and to increase defense spending, whether that's because they haven't spent enough, whether it's because of pressure from the US, who said, look, you guys, girls in Europe, have never paid your fair share. Politics is all about choices. And those choices for defense mean that monies have to be cut elsewhere. And we know that health is always at risk in those conversations because whilst everybody talks about the right to healthcare, how important it is when we're sick, it's so often considered as we can stretch and make do. There's slack in the system. We can always make efficiencies. We always hear this, don't we, from politicians in relation to healthcare. Well, I think that we all know, firstly, that there is not slack in our health systems. I mean, the pandemic told the world very clearly that our health systems were not prepared enough, were underinvested in. As a result of the pandemic, our health systems went back even further with all of the planned surgeries, non-communicable disease, chronic conditions as well. And the big plan was that we were going to catch up. So the evidence is fairly clear-cut that you're not going to be able to take more money out of health without causing real health harms. But I say this as well. You, others, we've made that argument about the need to invest in health because of the negative impacts on health for years. From my very early days as a student activist, we'd talk about Linda Aitken's evidence and not having enough nurses and the impact on mortality and burnout and infection rates and things. Absolutely right, actually. But it'd be really, really hard with ourselves. Has that really pushed us through with politicians to secure the sorts of investment increases that we want? And I'm not undermining that all of that evidence is hugely important. And if we hadn't had that evidence, then I don't want to think about where we might have been. But we need that and we need more. And that's one of the key reasons why we said, let's talk about the money, because we have an equally strong, powerful, persuasive economic case to talk about with nursing as we do a health case. The costs of getting healthcare wrong, 10, 12, 15% negative impact on GDP. So when we get healthcare wrong, it costs hugely, as well as the human costs to all of that. But the other thing we'll then hear from politicians is, well, we'd like to spend more, but when will we see a return on investment? Evidence shows as well, you will at least double your return on investment in lower income settings. You will get even more. Vanessa Kerry, she's been an advocate on climate change and health and other things. Her words were, these may not be exactly her words, but it's close. There has been a massive miscalculation of the value of nursing. And she looks at this, she's supportive of nursing, but dispassionately in terms of the evidence. And that was the conclusion that she came to. The likes of Helen Clark, Ursula von der Leyen, who's the president of the EU, recognizing the economic value in nursing as well. So we've put together the health evidence, the economic evidence, and I've talked about the multiple powers of nursing, the economic power, the health for healing power for peace. We've seen that through work we're doing through Nurses for Peace with ICN in places like Gaza and Israel at the moment, but through Ukraine, through Afghanistan, through Sudan as well. The Power of Storytelling and the Media. We had a big project with the BBC. The Power of safety in healthcare. The Power of Trust and how important trust is to public health. If we look at the science and we want to have conversations with the public about the science, who are they most likely to believe? Who are the trusted people? We are as nurses. We are. So there is power in the trust that we have as well. This isn't just about health. Health is foundational to so much of life. And I think about that. Just think about that with somebody in relation to your own family or your own health. I shared with you before we started recording this that I just had a bit of a serious accident on holiday, which means that I'm wearing a half body brace at the moment and have got some broken ribs and back and everything else, which I hope will heal. But we all know when we have those experiences, and I'm not being flippant about this, I can't put my own socks on at the moment. I have to rely on friends and family to do it. I have to take so much more time to do the normal everyday things that I'd like to do. Of course, you have the thoughts and feelings and concerns about your health and your future. It impacts on your family and on your nearest and dearest. So you magnify that through the ripples, through your family, through communities, through societies, and think about not to invest and support nursing on a whim or a prayer or because it's a good thing to do. Just follow the hard evidence. And if you're elected with a mandate, as all politicians are, to keep people safe and secure, if you don't look after health, you are immediately putting at risk that mandate you have to keep people safe and secure.
As you're talking about all of the different layers that play into that experience of health, and you know, I was listening to some of your other conversations and other interviews, and you actually use this example of thinking about health as an airbag, right? There is an assumption that the health system is going to be there when we need it, even if we don't see it, and realize that it is this ever-present resource across our societies. And when it's not there, what that actually means. And as we're talking about this need for this broader global awareness of the profession and what the profession does, right now it's projected that the global health worker shortage will increase to 11 million by 2030. So with this disproportionate burden on the WHO, African, Eastern, and Mediterranean regions, what are those concrete actions that would prioritize directly to combat these inequities and ensure that access and to ensure that the nursing services are available worldwide, especially in these areas of high need?
Communication, advocacy, language is so important. And that the airbag came out of some discussions that we were having about thinking about healthcare as a safety issue, thinking of another safety issue where you don't see the thing that keeps you safe until you need it the most, and the airbag inflates. And that also fits with what we said right early on about people taking healthcare for granted. Always assume we can cut because healthcare will come to our need when we most need it. And that's what worries me hugely at the moment, is that the nursing airbag, okay, that might not be the nicest way to express it, but I'm not really wanting to talk to nurses at this point, because I think nurses get that. And this is why it's so important sometimes that the audience I'm talking to are not nurses and not people who engage in this discussion a lot. And I want to find a language and an example and an analogy, which I hope pretty much everybody, regardless if they have no interest in nursing, will understand. So your question, we've got this huge maldistribution of nurses around. Not only do we not have enough, 5.8 million shortage. And let's remind ourselves that the shortage in 2020 that we reported then was around about 6 million. So it's not shifted very much. It's dropped only a little bit. But as well as not having enough, we have this huge maldistribution around the world. And even with the projections that we've done with WHO about what things will look like in 2030, you gave the number for all healthcare workers. The number for nursing is still going to be a shortage of around about 4 million. So what we've got in place at the moment isn't enough to take us to no shortages. So how do we, what do we do about this maldistribution issue? One of the big issues is international migration and recruitment. We've written and spoken about this extensively. We've seen a really significant increase in international migration since 2020, driven primarily by about eight, nine, 10 high-income countries, US and Canada, UK, Germany, Australia, Ireland, some others, who already had nursing shortages, were trying to catch up after the pandemic, needed even more nurses, and the quick fix is to go overseas. But when they go overseas, we're seeing very significant recruitment from low, middle income countries, countries who can least afford it, and those countries who then report to us the very real health harms of losing nurses. Service is stopping. There's often been this, oh, there's been this perception or myth that people being recruited are new graduates. They're not. A lot of the recruiters are going after specialist nurses. ICU nurses were like gold, well, still are, but were, you know, gold at one particular time as well. Now, no one's going to stand in the way of the individual's right to move and migrate. One can absolutely understand a nurse who's offered that opportunity for progression, for support, and for more money is going to go. But let's not kid ourselves that there isn't health harm to the populations and to those countries. And as those nursing inequalities grow, that they relate directly to the health inequalities that we see around the world as well. And where we have those widening health inequalities in relation to infectious disease or access and treatments as well, these are, of course, these are bad things for health. They're bad things for economies because we need healthy people to drive the labor market and to work and perform and all of those sorts of things. But those inequalities are also, and this is why we've talked more about issues around peace and conflict, are often factors that are at play when there are conflicts. Inequalities, feelings of not having your fair share, of somebody having more than you, of being held back, of an unfairness, of tensions. These are all ingredients that create climates and environments where conflicts can develop and can grow as well. So what do we need to do about all of this? Let me say, just in terms of the countries who are losing their nurses, because I think it's really important not to let them off the hook. And I've visited many of them, and I've heard about countries who have nurses who qualify and have to wait for 2 or 3 years before they can get a job. Countries who've made agreements for pay and conditions improvements years ago and never delivered on them as well. Those countries who are not supported, I'm not naive. I'm not saying that some of those low-income countries can suddenly pay the rates that you get in the US or people get in Europe, but many of those countries could be doing so much more to invest and support nurses in their countries. I mean, for most nurses, for most of us, I sort of think that there's always going to be a cohort of nurses who want to move and migrate and have that ambition. That's great. I think there's probably the majority of nurses who don't want to leave their family and their friends in their home. If they feel respected and valued and looked after, they'll stay. But then there are instances it just becomes so difficult and so intolerable that they feel that they're being pushed to go. And it may be for themselves, it may be to support their family as well. And I think that you can, you know, you're never going to stop the people who want to move and migrate, but those people who feel the push is just too hard on their back to go, I think that those countries can do an awful lot. But let's go back to the money question and let's really cut to the chase on the money. Those countries who are recruiting nurses from overseas have offset the education costs that they would have paid. I don't know, you know, in the UK now, in Europe, 50, 60, 70,000 to educate a nurse, more probably in the US. You look at the numbers, one of the latest statistics was that a quarter of nurses in high-income countries were educated in another country. And we've seen some academic research which has just emerged, which has basically put the cost savings to high-income countries into the tens of billions of dollars. You know, this is the great global nursing ripoff. But you know, this then made me think a little bit more. Our traditional narrative has been politicians, policymakers, don't get the true value of nursing. And I flipped that and I forced myself, actually, perhaps they really do. They really do know what the value is because they're saving all of this money by recruiting overseas rather than educating at home. Policymakers do use nursing as a currency. They do. And if they're using nursing as a currency, they do understand some of the bottom line dollar, pound, sterling, euro numbers that are attached to it. And I think it's important to call that out because I don't think we've called that out. It's uncomfortable for people. It's very uncomfortable. I was in a meeting in Africa and some of the African nurse leaders said to me, Howard, you have to realize what this feels like to us is a form of neo-colonialism. Now, you repeat that in Geneva or in other places as well. It's not comfortable for people to hear, but I think people need to feel some of the discomfort. And then what do we do about it? What do we do about it? Well, can you imagine if countries said, look, we, because they all say we want to recruit ethically and it needs to be fair. There needs to be mutual benefit. That's another phrase they use. So if you saved 10 billion, why don't you say 5 billion of that we'll put into a global health nursing education fund and WHO or ICN could play a role or whatever. We'll help to distribute that money to countries to build a nursing school, train some faculty, support some improved working conditions. I know it sounds terribly simplistic and I've been told it's naive as well, but why not? If we follow the money, why not ask that? But a slightly more sophisticated way, most of those countries who are struggling with investing in their health systems carry huge amounts of debt. And the sovereign debt, the debt that they hold, which is basically debt that they owe to high income countries, can in some places be more than their health budget, almost what they're having to pay in interest as well. How about, okay, if high income countries, you don't want to set up a global health education fund, why don't you write off some of the debt on the proviso, on the condition that the money doesn't disappear to a bridge or a road or a back pocket, to be frank. It has to be earmarked for health and for nursing. But that is another way that you could look at it as well. From the way that we were taught in terms of how do we address all of these things, the global strategy for nursing midwifery, we need to invest in education, in leadership, in advanced practice roles, in decent jobs, in improving regulation. Yes, 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 all of these bread and butter foundations of nursing. But for me, there are these other levels of well, which my aim, my hope through conversations like this is that people can see how we've made the connections through to some of those bigger issues. Follow the money and see where it takes you.
Howard, we're looking at the complexity of the system. The way I describe it to people is it's almost like playing cat's cradle with a spider web, right? So again, as you're talking about those trade-offs, as we're thinking about how nurses are educated, the state of our workforce, demands at the national level that are playing into how all of these decisions are getting made, there is a complexity, but there's also an incredible opportunity for collaboration. And so part of that is when we look at academia, regulators, health policy, health facilities, really working together to ensure that nursing education is aligned and optimized, and that those roles are given commensurate recognition through what they're paid and increasing that educational investment. What are your thoughts there around collaboration? Yeah.
So there's a couple of, I mean, there's a point about collaboration and then there's a point about faculty and educators as well. And it's important just to say a little bit about both of them. The collaboration, sometimes one of our biggest weaknesses as a profession is that we retreat to our tribes and the specialist nurses, the educators, the associations, the regulators, the government nurses, you know, the asthma specialist nurses. We all, you know, and it's great that we have all of these special interest groups, but we could, and we need to do so much better to come together on the big issues, issues around education preparation, issues around regulation, issues around ethics. In the last few months, we have just issued a new definition of nursing from ICN. And just 3 years ago, three, 4 years ago, we issued an updated code of ethics as well. And what I would say about both those, The things that I've said about the complexity of decision making, for example, the things that I've said about nurses' role in terms of advocating for rights and social justice, this isn't just because they're trendy words of the moment. These are embedded in these seminal documents from ICN, the definition of nursing, the code of ethics. These are principles and values that are part of the DNA, the bone marrow of nursing. But it's a really difficult period of time because of the global challenges we're facing to live by them. But we're bringing them to the fore. We're putting them out there. It is really difficult to talk about human rights, given what we're seeing around the world, the conflict zones that we're seeing, when in fact, what the world needs for the big challenges that are out there is cooperation, collaboration, working together. And actually, the next problem might be a different group of partners or people who you need to work with. So that flexibility, that adaptability, I think it's a fundamental for new nurses, and but not just for new, but for experienced nurses as well. So try and come together more on the big issues and have a common voice, because when you don't, it's the easiest thing in the world for the politicians to say, and they've said it to me a million times. How do you know that I actually agree with you? I think what you're saying is that makes a lot of sense. But I had the regulators in this morning, and they said something different. I'm seeing the ICU nurses later, and they think slightly different. So come together more on the bigger issues to mobilize the power of 30 million. It's globally. That's what I'm trying to do globally. But in your hospital or in your clinic, even if you think there's only 5 or 10 of you, think about what percentage that represents of your clinic or of your workplace. You're big enough together to have to be heard and listened to when you raise a voice, and raise that voice together, and make sure that you use associations, bring them in to help and support you as well. Associations, you need to step up, you need to listen, you need to be providing services and support that respond to needs. And you need to be brave on occasions to say the things that nurses in practice feel unable to state, understandably, because they're worried about the repercussions. But your association can say those things. And even if you've got relationships with government as well, we all know that's just a tricky line to walk. But we are there primarily as member associations in the best interests of our members and the great profession that they represent as well.
Part of leading in an association space, thinking about where does the profession need to be? What work do we need to lead to ensure that the profession is strong moving into the future? There are lots of different ways in which associations do that work, even, as we look at investing in our profession in different ways, because there are aspects of care that have been done since the beginning of time, but we are simultaneously living in this moment where technology is shifting rapidly. As we're seeing digital health technologies, as we are seeing the advancement of artificial intelligence, as we're looking at this shift in this moment and how nurses need to be prepared and weaving that into our educational frameworks, and how do we ensure that the nursing and health workforce has the capacity to navigate forward. What's your view? What's your vision around how do we move the nursing workforce into the future and through these demands that are going to be required of nurses?
The issues around AI, technology, digi health, all of those, embrace it, embrace it, embrace it, control it, embrace it and control whatever piece of tech it is. It's the nurses who understand the need that it is trying to address. It's the nurses in whose hands that technology is, and they see how it works, how it interacts and interrelates with the patient. They see what the patient's reaction to it is. They see if it doesn't work, it's the nurses who'll find the workaround and do something else instead. And it's the nurses who will see whether it is resulting in a health improvement and benefit. And we'll hear if the patients are nervous and unsure about the technology and their engagement with it as well. And I think that what frustrates me then is that when you and to be fair, most of the tech companies get the fact that it's going to be the tech is going to be in the hands of nurses, and they're going to be using it, and they want. But it's so much more about being just the users of the tech. That role as user tech means that we should be involved in the design, and we should be involved in the evaluation, and we should be involved in next generation development as well. And there are many nurses, there are more nurses now who I see who are moving into that space. So embrace it. Follow the patient needs, follow the care, follow the course for health improvement and what you're trying to. And if that takes you through data, it takes you through technology, it takes you through decision making, it takes you out of health to housing and to employment and other sectors. Keep it real, keep it real, keep it real. And we should. The relationships that nurses have with patients, the human to human contact, the compassion, the empathy, the sympathy, the understanding the verbals and the nonverbals, walking the journey through people's highest points to their lowest points, their most vulnerable, beginning, end of life, all of these things. None of the data, none of the technology, none of the innovation, none of the robots are ever, ever, ever going to take that over. Nursing is humanity in motion, that core of what the profession is all about. Those humanistic principles have been there, always been there, and always will be.
Howard, one of the experiences that I would highly recommend to any nurse is if they have a chance to attend an ICN conference, how incredibly powerful it is to see nurses at global scale. And part of attending those conferences is also the incredible opportunity to hear and glean insight from nurses and their experiences nationally. And hearing nurses who were talking about what it meant to be safe in their environment when they were providing care. There are some regions of the globe where nurses have been taken from their healthcare facilities. There were countries having conversations about it's the Department of Defense that is actually looking at the nursing workforce and what is that minimum threshold that has to be present of nurses for their population to be safe and so that they can provide care safely to their population. So curious, are there other aspects of this global experience through your deep listening, those aspects of global nursing that other nurses may not know about, or if they have not been into an ICN conference, is there a way to share some of those global experiences?
Yeah, we simply are the conveners. We're able to get, ICN is able to gather people together. And if we can gather people together in a venue and create a space and an environment, the profession does it for themselves. It's that's then you see the magic happens, and we don't bring the magic as ICN. You know, we haven't got the magic dust, the sprinkle dust, the whatever. It's the people, but it's the people. But I think that sort of speaks to your point about the strength of the profession. And what happens when you bring nurses together, whichever countries that they happen to come from? This is feedback we had from Helsinki, from the conference organizers, who said, we have never had a professional conference where the vibe, the reaction, the energy has been what you had at ICN. They said, when we see that energy, that vibe, that excitement, the fun, the laughter, all of that, the emotion. So it's when we have pop concerts or when we have music events or things like that. Now, that's not something that we can create from ICN, but the desire of the profession to come together, to share, to learn, yes, to get up to date on the latest science, of course, that's hugely important, to hear from leading figures in the profession, be able to share their own stories of innovation. It's a way of support as well, in terms of, yeah, we're all going through similar issues, and just that sharing is important, as well as, well, what some of the answers and what some of the solutions may be to it. And it's, again, I think some of the global events that we've talked about, the really challenging global events, you know, you just look at the support that there was for that parade of associations that we have, the support for all countries, but the support particularly as well, the countries who are in really challenging situations at the moment. You know, there are some difficult, tough issues, as we know, but within that nursing community, it was but respect and support for what people are trying to do, because they're bound together by the essential values of profession and what people are trying to do in their practice every day, whether they happen to be in the biggest, highest tech healthcare facility that there is on this planet, or whether they are working on their own in a hugely remote environment, supporting a nomadic people. It's the core brings them all together. But if you just come just to recharge and to reaffirm your faith and your commitment to the work that you do and the importance of what you do as well, I think there's a little bit of that which the Congress can help people with.
And I think just as we're wrapping up, as you're talking about this attending for your own well-being, and we're thinking about the well-being of nurses moving forward, there are global conversations about the well-being of the nursing workforce and how critical that is to making sure that we have nurses there to support communities and individuals. What are your thoughts around well-being for nurses moving forward? What are those things that you're looking at from a global lens or insights from talking with nurses around the country and globally?
And this is where I'd go back and say it's important to look at the State of the World's Nursing Report, some of the results in there. There's a couple of ICN reports that we put out, a survey of national nursing associations that we put out. We've all known about the pressures and the stresses on nurses and the high rates of burnout and sickness and mental health challenges as well. But the response of our health systems is, frankly, it's appalling in far too many places. The level of attacks and assaults, the lack of action, the support for people who are off sick as a result of incidents at work as well. Still, in far too many places, this pervading, almost heroic culture that, suggests that it's part of the job and you just get on with it, and that actually the weakness was with you, if not, I mean, that was the whole rhetoric around resilience in our health systems and nurses need to be more resilient, that really irritated me an awful lot during the pandemic. It's our health systems that aren't prepared, haven't been invested in it a week. Don't lay this off on the individual nurses who are then having to deal with the trauma, the death, the disease, the rawness of the emotions that they're having to experience. And I'm struck now, recent conversations I've had with nurses who've been in some of the worst conflict zones that there are around the world, just how you cope as a nurse with seeing that level of brutality against people, particularly children and women. I remember quite vividly a couple of incidents of very traumatic road traffic accidents and caring for that I still remember now, but they happened on a shift. And then, there was only perhaps two or three of those incidences when I was being educated as a nurse. I talk to nurses now in some of these, and they go from one to another in a shift, in a shift, in a shift. And it's at the same time as they're concerned about their own and safety as well. We've got a huge problem with healthcare globally in terms of its lack of resourcing and recognition of mental health as an issue. You go even to the high-income countries, their healthcare systems. If we're in a physical crisis, we expect to be picked up by an ambulance within 4 or 5 minutes and treated within a 20-minute magic window. Or, we have all of those targets and we know what those are. But if you have a major mental health crisis, you might wait for years to get any support. This is a huge issue for nurses' mental health, but I think it's a big issue about societal issues about how we prioritize and value mental health as well. Your associations can be hugely supportive if you feel you're under pressure to continue and you're not getting the level of support that you need. But we need to look at, again, back to some of the root causes, which are staffing levels, ratios, lack of equipment. One of the most recent surveys I was looking at from the UK as well, and just showing how where our health systems are failing, people are having to wait so that by the time that they get seen, they are super agitated, really sick, and their relatives are at their wits' end. Who are they going to take it out on? I'm not justifying it. It's never justifiable to attack a healthcare care worker, but the way the system is often being managed because of the pressures it's under, those pressure valves release in the faces of the nurses who are there trying to care for people as well. I think, and we're seeing this for younger generations who, in terms of the decisions about recruitment, not just as important as retention is, this is a huge retention issue, but I think it's also increasingly a recruitment issue from younger generations who are much more demanding about their work-life balance and how they expect to be treated and looked after at work as well.
So as we're coming into the close, if you could envision this aspirational state for what nursing could look like if it was truly fully invested in and supported, what would that look like?
What it sort of looks like is where you would see your communities and your societies with people who were just functioning to the best that they could every day. It's not for me about imagining that future where I say, what does it look like in the health facility, in the hospital or the clinic? You know, that's the place what people have said, you know, you go to for the repair, you know, it's the repair shop. But when we repair people or the work that we're doing to keep people well, to create health, actually the bigger prize is not that you see that people are well, but you see all of the things that they're empowered and they're enabled to do with their health, within their communities, to thrive in their workplaces, to grow, to develop, to have dynamic relationships, to feel fulfilled and happy, to be recognizing how they're codependent on other people as well, and collaborating and working together. So I think it's that prize of when nursing works well, because actually, you know, the invisibility of that work, the health that it creates, we don't see it in the improved health, but we then see it in the improved lives that people lead and the quality of the lives that they lead, which is why, you know, I've said that nursing is very much its humanity in motion, its humanity in action. And if you want to invest in humanity, if you want to invest in well-being, in positive societies, respectful, engaged, driving forward both for individual achievement and common good, if that's the sort of humanity that you're interested in, then invest in nursing.
Nurse Howard Catton is the Executive Officer of the International Council of Nurses. ICN is the body recognized by the World Health Organization and other international organizations to speak on behalf of the global nursing profession. Oriana Baudette is the Vice President of Innovation at the American Nurses Association Credentialing Center and Foundation. Coming up in the next episode of See You Now, we'll join the immediate past president of the ICN and the former president of the American Nurses Association, Pam Cipriano, as we continue our Investing in Nurses series.
It is even more important right now to move nursing from being invisible to invaluable. We need to reorient our systems to prevention, to public health, to primary health care. With investment in nursing, you're going to be able to save lives. You're going to be able to save money. You are going to be able to have healthier people, which means more productive people, and then that strengthens your economies.
You can find more information on See You Now, along with over 100 episodes in our library, wherever you get podcasts. And please subscribe to the show, rate and review it, and share it with your networks, communities, and friends. Also, we would love to hear from you. Email us at hello@seeyounowpodcast.com. For See You Now, I'm Rebecca McEnroy. Thanks for listening. Nurses are transforming healthcare through innovation, compassion, and leadership. And Johnson & Johnson is proud to continue its 125-year commitment to champion nurses through recognition, skill building, leadership development, and more. The American Nurses Association is dedicated to building a culture of innovation. Nurses improve the lives of patients and communities through innovative thinking, empathetic connection, scientific rigor, and sheer determination. ANA is proud to support and advocate for our nation's most valuable healthcare resource, our nurses. For more information on See You Now, visit seeyounowpodcast.com and listen to any of the earlier episodes in our library, wherever you get podcasts.